think the whole process of making this miniseries has been bizarre.
That's Bill Pullman. He's the actor who stars in the NBC miniseries Revelations. Always interesting when they put the S at the end of that word. That miniseries premieres tomorrow night. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be hearing a little bit more from Bill Pullman, his thoughts on making this miniseries on the end of the world, and then from Jerry Jenkins, the co-author, along with Tim LaHaye, of the Left Behind series that probably in a more popular and widespread way brought the whole end times thinking to the popular mindset. Well, picking up on that, NBC can hardly be faulted for making its own end times miniseries. I mean, that's what they do. They make miniseries, they make movies of the week, they produce television. Are you planning on watching this? We're going to be hearing from Pullman and from Jenkins their reaction to it. I'm wondering about your reaction. It is about the end times. It is being produced, well, I think with some consultation toward Scripture, some references toward Jesus. What do you expect from it? And how will you, if you're going to be watching this miniseries on NBC, Revelations, how will you be evaluating it? That's a question for you here in the first half hour of Issues, Etc. A little bit of open lines for your questions and your comments. Now, starting at 3:30, going until 4:30, an hour-long conversation with Bill McKeever on Mormon history. He is founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Utah. He has written this book that I have found useful on more than one occasion called Mormonism 101. In fact, that's the book I hand out to Mormons when they come to the door. They've already got their Bibles. They don't pay much attention to that. But you hand them a copy of Mormonism 101, and they may learn some things about their church they never learned before. We'll be talking with Bill McKeever about real Mormon history in about 25 minutes here on Issues, Etc. That's followed by our sermon review. Now, this time, it's a big one. We're going to be listening to and reviewing the sermon by Cardinal Ratzinger given at the Pope's funeral this last week. It's not a long sermon. It's really rather simple. We will be listening to it in translation, so don't worry about trying to decipher the Italian. I couldn't tell if it was Italian or Latin, to tell you the truth. So we will be listening to it in translation. And as we usually do, stopping occasionally and offering a few thoughts and comments and critiques as well. So that's the last bit of Issues, Etc. Open lines during that time as well. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We are back live on April the 12th. It's Tuesday here on Issues, Etc. Now here's more from the lead actor of the NBC miniseries Revelations, Bill Pullman. He says it's been hard producing a network TV miniseries based on the Bible's end times prophecies.
We've had a huge ordeal to get the thing going and made because just it's been a tough story to write. Everybody's nervous about it. NBC's,
we don't want to offend anybody. And they don't want to offend anybody, says Bill Pullman. They're worried about how they might treat the end times. Now, according to Jerry Jenkins, however, and he has had a chance to look into some of this in advance of the premiere tomorrow night of the miniseries Revelations, not too impressed with how they kept to the biblical script. Let's hear from Jerry Jenkins. He's co-author of the Left Behind series, along with Tim LaHaye. He thinks about Revelations. He says it's oddly written, but well produced.
This, I have to say, is not poor quality work, so that's a positive. But if we do things that are sort of full of myth and silliness and strangeness, it's not going to be popular with the base audience, say, of evangelicals.
Now, some people might say that Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye's novels on the Left Behind series were also full of myth, legend, and strangeness. What was the name of that group of people who fly around the world trying to counter the machinations of the Antichrist? That's a little strange. That's not, strictly speaking, from the text. Hopping around in armored airplanes and Humvees doing war with the Antichrist. So there's a little myth at work in Jenkins' work as well. Jenkins says that NBC's Revelation suggests that end times events may occur which are not actually found in the Bible.
there's nothing in the prophecies or in Scripture about Jesus coming back as a baby, or of human beings having any say in the timing of God and delaying the apocalypse or anything like that.
All right. That's Jerry Jenkins. We'll hear just one more bite from him in a minute. But my question for you here in the first half hour of Issues, Etc., are you planning on watching this? It's being touted all over the place if you're watching NBC. The miniseries that will run through this week, premiering tomorrow night, Revelations on the End Times, looks like pretty scary stuff, pretty weird and wild stuff. If you're planning on watching, how will you be evaluating this miniseries? Will you watch it with a Book of Revelation in hand, seeing if you can match it point for point? A lot of people believe they can do that with the Left Behind series by Jenkins and LaHaye. Try that sometime, by the way. You might find it as difficult as, say, the NBC miniseries. So what are your expectations? It is primetime television. What are your expectations from NBC in this Revelations miniseries? Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. If you're not going to watch it, if you have no plans on interrupting your regular evening schedule for television or whatever it may be, to switch over to NBC and watch Revelations, why not? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Finally here, Jerry Jenkins, co-author of the Left Behind series, says that Revelations really bears little resemblance to the Bible's book of Revelation.
This seems to be based on myth and sort of New Age things and just made-up stuff that nobody finds in Scripture.
Okay. People might be watching this. Maybe you'll watch it the first night. If it doesn't follow the script of Scripture, will you lose interest? What will you be watching it for if you're watching it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, Issues, etc. I'd like to know whether you're going to be watching Revelations. You know, miniseries have a way of coming back around, too. And they do have a certain audience to them. I mean, for people who don't want to sit down and watch the regular television fare, who want a more involved story, what bigger subject could you have than the end of the world? And if you're going to loosely base your miniseries on things the Bible says and then add in a few things that the Bible doesn't say and take license with the story, well, you could go just about any place. I remember, and I've told this story before, sitting in an airplane a couple of years back, and this was when the Left Behind series was, well, probably three books into the Left Behind series. And everyone was reading this thing, and when you walk through the airport, that's what's out there on the front of every bookstore, every newsstand, one of these novels in the Left Behind series. And this was a small plane, we were all crammed in there, and the stewardess was reading the first one, Left Behind. And someone leaned over the aisle to her while we were just cruising along, and she said, I've seen that everywhere. What's that book about? I'm fascinated by that. What is that really all about? I see everyone reading it. Her answer was, it's about the end times. It's about when Jesus comes again. And then she said something that really made my ears perk up. Knowing the very little that I did even at the time about the Left Behind series, she said, it's all based entirely on the Bible. It all comes straight from the Bible. Well, now even Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye will admit that not everything in the novels comes straight from the Bible. And one might argue that very little of it comes straight from the Bible. If we rightly understand the book of Revelation and the end times as Scripture really presents it. And if you're willing to let Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye take a little license with the story, how much license would you allow NBC? Give that some thought and give me a call. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
If survival and pleasure are the only possible principles that nature does not seem to reject, does not all courage and devotion to honor look like folly?
That was Dr. Leon Cass. He's the chairman of the President's Council on Bioethics. He was speaking recently at the College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts. Dr. Cass is President George W. Bush's bioethicist. You will remember that shortly after President George W. Bush made his decision in his first term to allow certain lines of stem cells or the product of certain lines of stem cells to be used with federal money for research, it was not long after that that Leon Cass was tapped to be bioethics chair. He was criticized by some and heralded by others. I think it was a great choice. Now here, Dr. Cass is reflecting more broadly on really two different worldviews.
What chance have our ideas of freedom and dignity under even any high-minded humanistic dispensation against the teachings of strict determinism in behavior and survival as the only natural concern of life?
Now he's contrasting here the difference between not a Christian worldview and a Darwinist worldview. Even more generally than that, he is contrasting a worldview where human life has dignity that can be grounded in something beyond just, well, I feel good about myself, or I'm the most highly evolved creature on the planet, and one that says, no, there is inherent dignity in human life. Now, this is an important apologetic in the culture of death for Dr. Cass to make. The difference between, just asking the question, if we go with the prevailing mindset of scientific research that is based upon kind of macroevolution, everything in the world is the product of blind chance, a mindless, thoughtless universe. If we go with this, can we find any basis for human dignity at all? Can we find for any basis for human value? What value would a human being at any stage of life have over against any other product of evolution? It's not the difference between Christianity and atheism or Christianity and Darwinism. It's the difference between two basic worldviews, one in which there is an objective basis for human dignity, I would say grounded ultimately in the Creator, and one in which there is no Creator, therefore no real ground for saying that human life has any value whatsoever. Now, Cass says that many scientists feel entitled to public support.
Not sharing the moral sensibilities of the wider public, devoted to their research, they don't understand at all why they should surrender even a bit of their freedom to inquire and experiment, no matter who doesn't like it.
Now, of course, this is the worst-case scenario, but he's right to point it out. There are scientists who do not think they should hand over any of their academic or research freedom for ethical considerations. And it is true that there is a fair amount of arrogance on the part of medical research that will come back to someone like Cass or anyone who wants to object to the path of their research and say, you are standing in the way of science, or usually it's put in these terms, and haven't we heard this so often before, you are standing in the way of cures. That brings us back to the whole stem cell issue, doesn't it? The researcher says, look, not only do I have academic and scientific freedom to pursue this, but I'm doing it for a noble purpose, and you can't question what I'm doing. Now here Dr. Leon Cass, chairman of the President's Council on Bioethics, says that scientific materialism undermines basic human dignity.
This challenge goes much farther than the notorious case of evolution versus biblical religion. Is there any elevated view of human life and goodness that is proof against the belief that man is just a collection of molecules, an accident on the stage of evolution, a freakish speck of mind in the mindless universe?
I think he's trying to demonstrate how bleak the worldview that rules in most scientific research really is. And he's asking the question that he asked at the very beginning once more. Is there any room for the consideration of the human being as something more than just the product of mindless evolution when your whole system is built on mindless evolution. Now, doubtless Cass will be accused of advocating some sort of creationism. He did mention there in a kind of a sidelong way the Scopes monkey trial, the great showdown between evolution and Darwinian thought, creation and Darwinian thought. You know, at this time in the public square, we don't even have to go that far. I think these are good questions he is suggesting for those of us who do believe in creation, who do believe in human dignity grounded in something other than, well, I'm here, I can assert my rights, I have a certain amount of power, and as long as I retain those, I retain my value. But the minute I lose them, a la Terry Schiavo, I'm useless. I'm worthless. Here's a good question to pose, and I think he's suggesting these. If not the founding of human dignity in, let's put it this way. If human life does not have inherent value, that adheres to every member of the species, regardless of how little they are, how big they are, how young they are, how old they are, where they are, how developed or undeveloped they are. If not that, then what? That's what Dr. Cass is basically asking. If not that, then what? Then where will you find the source of human dignity? Where will you locate your assertion of your rights, your value? You know, this goes beyond things like stem cell research. Think about this question. How can we say that it's wrong for one person to take an innocent human life? We just heard about this high school up there on the reservation that was a home to this tragedy, this yet another high school shooting. What, 10 kids killed, others injured? High school just opened for them again. They're still trying to figure out everyone who is involved in this crime. Now, we call it a crime, but, and I don't mean this facetiously, but how can you call it a crime if human value is based upon subjective things? If human beings have no inherent value that adheres to every member of the species, regardless of their location, their development, their size, their age, their wantedness, if not that, then what? How can we call the taking of innocent human life with a gun in an abortionist office, anything else, wrong or even right? In a world where we are nothing more than the product of blind chance. Your reaction to what Dr. Leon Cass had to say. I think he's raising some excellent questions for the public square, for people. You don't even broach the question of creation or abortion, and even stem cell research, just basic human value. Let's sit down at the table and talk about basic human dignity. If it's something that is, if it is not ours inherently as human beings, then what? Then how can you make any assertion of human dignity? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I also liked your reaction on the NBC miniseries Revelations. It debuts tomorrow night. Are you planning on watching it? And if you are, what will your expectations be from NBC in their presentation of the end of the world? They're going to base it. I went to the website, looked this thing up. It says based upon the prophecies of the Bible's book of Revelation. Now, whenever we see anything on television that says based upon, that always means based very loosely upon. When you watch your other miniseries based on a true story, that usually means, well, you know, someone was inspired to write this miniseries by something true they heard, but what you're going to watch here really bears no actual resemblance to the events. Even when they do well-known crimes, they're going to do the story of Scott and Lacey Peterson. And it will say at the beginning of this thing, based upon actual events. And then they will take certain liberties, depending on what kind of story they want to tell. So what are your expectations for NBC's miniseries, Revelations? If you're not going to watch it, why not? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Issues, etc. is back live this Tuesday, April the 12th. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'll be right honest with you up front here. I'm not going to be watching the NBC miniseries. I'll tell you why. One, I don't have the time. I've got a family. But don't let that stop you. I sit that long in front of the television and I fall asleep. Number two, we have some appointment viewing at our house during this time of the year, and it's called American Idol. So I'd have to miss part of it, and having to miss part of it, it would kind of take the wind out of the sails. That's what I get for having a 13-year-old daughter in the house. But what about you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. One way you might want to spend at least a little time with your family this evening is with our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April. This is a book that is designed for either individual or family devotions. It's called The Lord Will Answer, A Daily Prayer Catechism. It takes the basic teachings of the Christian faith, the Ten Commandments, the Creed, the Lord's Prayer, baptism, absolution, the Lord's Supper, breaks it down in the form of Luther's Small Catechism, over 365 days throughout the year, every day of the week, a little bit of the catechism, a little bit of what do we learn from this, a prayer, Bible passages are figured there very prominently. A great way to review the basic teachings of the Christian faith with your family, and it is designed for devotions. It's called The Lord Will Answer, A Daily Prayer Catechism. It's $14.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org. Look on the homepage. You'll find a picture of the book right there. Just click on the link next to it, or you can actually click on the book itself, and you'll find information and a way to order the book. Or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. In fact, you got 90 minutes to do right now. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April. The Lord will answer. Make sure you mention Issues, Etc. 1-800-325-3040. Ellen calls from Baldwin. Ellen, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Oh, hello, Pastor. Welcome.
Hi.
You're wanting some opinions from the listeners. I'm not going to watch that series, and I'll tell you why. I had such an overdose of that back in the 60s and 70s. With the late great Planet Earth and all that stuff, I, at that point in my life, I thought maybe those people were right. But later I came back, right back to my Lutheran thinking and what I had been taught. But I had such an overdose of reading all that stuff back then that I had enough to last me the rest of my life.
Ellen, thank you very much. All right, Ellen's not going to be watching the NBC miniseries Revelations. She's had enough of it. She got a snoop full back in the 70s with Hal Lindsey's book. I remember the comic books. These were hoisted upon us. Endless comic books depicting the end times. What about you? When we come back, we'll be talking with Bill McKeever.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Do you find that you struggle for words when you pray? Are you unsure what to pray for? Do you fear praying for the wrong things? Do your prayers lack focus and direction? Do you feel unworthy to approach God in prayer? Our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April is a daily devotional titled, The Lord Will Answer. This resource presents prayers in one-page, easy-to-use devotions. The Lord Will Answer is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Or you can browse on our website, issuesetc.org. The Lord Will Answer explains the six R's of prayer: recite, read, reflect, repent, rejoice, and request. The Lord Will Answer costs $14.99 plus shipping and handling. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. The Lord Will Answer, our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April.
Teaching English can have an impact for Christ. This Global Minute lets you hear how missionaries in the Czech Republic combine English classes with Bible lessons. English Bible meetings are held twice a month with students who hear a teaching and then discuss their views in small groups. When non-Christians visit, they may be skeptical when they hear about God for the first time. Some have their atheistic worldview shaken and they accept Christ. Missionaries serving with Operation Mobilization in the Czech Republic say they invest time with others so they can share Jesus Christ's purpose. God is using OM missionaries to help local Christians get a desire to serve Christ cross-culturally. Most Czech Christians say people should stay and serve in their own communities. Pray for Christ's glory to shine in the Czech Republic. Put your faith into action with a missions trip through OM. Visit the website www.usa.om.org. That's usa.om.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Do you ever get frustrated by casual conversations at the water cooler? I don't mean frustration at what is being said, idle chatter, office gossip, and the like, but do you get irritated that people who have work to do aren't doing it? Today the Senate holds a confirmation hearing for John Negroponte, nominated by President Bush to be the first Director of National Intelligence. This new position is extremely important because of intelligence failures associated with the war on terrorism. A theme that will be heard in today's confirmation hearing is a sense of urgency. Negroponte doesn't have much time, said Richard Kerr, a former deputy director of Central Intelligence. If we don't move fast, we will lose the ability to assess enormous threats correctly. But we are also going to lose many good people, said Representative Jane Harman. A similar sense of urgency is not heard at the water cooler pace of many church people. A spoof on Onward Christian Soldiers says, like a mighty turtle moves the church of God, brothers, we are treading where we've always trod. But Jesus said, we must do the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. John 9, verse 4. Do you need to donate a water cooler to your church that talks about mission? Or is your church urgently on mission?
Is tradition a good thing or a bad thing? What about practice? Is tradition the same as practice? We talked about those things, plus the Lord's Supper, earlier today on our Bible study program with Pastor John Lukowski. If you missed it, why not tune in tonight for the Bible study repeat, coming your way at 7:05.
The Bible study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
Whenever a Mormon comes to your door, usually in twos, and you sit down and begin the conversation, one of the very first things that they will do is open up the Book of Mormon, not to the middle, not to the end, but to the very beginning. In fact, even before the Book of Mormon itself formally begins, somewhere near the title page, and they will read to you the account of some witnesses who saw Joseph Smith translate this thing, and some words of praise for Joseph Smith as a man and as the founder of the Mormon Church. One of the very first things they will do. And then they'll talk to you about their testimony. Now, if you've done this enough with the Mormon elders at your door, you might have noticed something. There's potential, great potential, for a disconnect there. Is what Joseph Smith said really true? Did the events that he recounted in the Book of Mormon and then elsewhere in other sacred writings to the Mormons actually occur? We're going to be talking about Mormon history during this hour of Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome to the program. Bill McKeever is our guest. He joins us in just a moment, but you join us as well. If you have a question or a comment on Mormon history, and in particular, the new apologetic that is at work in the Mormon Church, our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or our email address here in the studio issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, the best callers or emailers will get Bill's book called Mormonism 101, the best book I have ever found, basic book on Mormonism, the best book to use when you're dealing with the elders at the door. Mormonism 101, 1-800-730-2727, or our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Bill McKeever is a regular guest. He's founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Utah. He's co-author of this book, Mormonism 101, and he has also written an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled LDS Apologetics and the Battle for Mormon History. Bill, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me back.
Before we get into the broader subject of Mormon apologetics and those who are defending the historicity of Mormon truth claims, there's an incident recently in which this kind of came to the fore. Richard Mao of Fuller Theological Seminary, he's president there, and Ravi Zacharias, well-known Christian apologist, appeared together at a Mormon forum, and both had things to say. Tell us about what happened there and your take on it.
Well, actually, it was a combined effort of a Christian organization here in the Salt Lake Valley called Standing Together and the Richard L. Evans Chair at Brigham Young University, and they had invited Dr. Zacharias to come in, and Dr. Mao was also invited to say a few words prior to Ravi taking the pulpit. And unfortunately, Dr. Mao had made this blanket apology, actually saying that Christians in the past have actually borne false witness. In fact, let me just read the statement so we don't take it out of context. He made the comment, he said, "Indeed, let me state it bluntly to the LDS folks here this evening, we have sinned against you. The God of the Scriptures makes it clear that it is a terrible thing to bear false witness against our neighbors, and we have been guilty of that sort of transgression in things we have said about you. We have told you what you believe without making a sincere effort, first of all, to ask you what you believe." And, of course, this caused a whole deal of commotion among not only people who were in direct ministry to the Mormon people, such as myself, but also many of the pastors here in the Salt Lake Valley who felt that Dr. Mao's comments were really out of line and were far too broad brush. And naturally, he has kind of gotten a lot of criticism for this statement, as I think he should. I know we've certainly spelled out our criticisms on our website regarding the things that he said and his alleged clarification. But it was sad that that happened, because that seemed to be the focus of attention. And in fact, the next day in the Deseret News and our local paper, everything was focused around what Dr. Mao said rather than what Dr. Zacharias actually said that evening. Which, of course, has been very unfortunate.
Now, in defense of Dr. Zacharias here, I understand, I've read his comments. He took a far more apologetic approach. No apologies, that is, no we're sorrys on his part, but actually tried to say, here is what the Christian faith is, and here is how we have stark differences between us. And it sounds as though he was doing probably what he should have been doing there.
Yeah. People often ask me about this, and I say, if you separate, you know, from what Dr. Mao actually said, from what Dr. Zacharias actually said. Dr. Zacharias, I didn't have a real problem with anything that he said that night. Now, I wasn't expecting him to come to Salt Lake City and do a point-by-point, you know, refutation of Mormonism, something that I probably do when I'm asked to do that at conferences and churches and things like that. But, you know, I knew he was going to come in here and he was going to give a good defense of the faith, and I think he did. If we look at what Dr. Zacharias actually said, he made it very clear what the Christian position was. Unfortunately, like I say, it was overshadowed by the comments that were made earlier in the evening, and that's really tragic.
Now, this goes to our subject here. Richard Mao, in his defense, said, "Look, I've been reading some apologists, some Mormon apologists, and I'm wondering, based upon what these Mormon apologists have been saying, whether or not there's as much distance and light between Orthodox Christianity and Mormonism as we first thought." What kind of things is he reading from Mormon apologists?
Well, apparently what he's doing is he is taking at face value some things that some scholars at Brigham Young University have said to him and other Christian scholars behind closed doors. They've been having several of these meetings, a meeting of the minds, if you will, between Christian scholars and Mormon scholars. And they've been discussing a lot of these tougher issues. And apparently what has happened is that there are some BYU professors who either have no longer a firm belief in the basic teachings of the Mormon Church as it was specifically taught around the time of Joseph Smith and Brigham Young, or in the 19th century, clear on up through the 20th century, and have now started to get away from some of those teachings, or they're actually spinning a lot of what the Church actually teaches and believes in a way that sounds very palatable to Christians. The wording sounds very good, but again, we have to get down to the basic definitions of these words. And unfortunately, what I saw in Dr. Mao's clarification was, is he makes, for instance, a reference to the Lorenzo Snow couplet. Lorenzo Snow was the fifth president of the Church, who made the comment, as man is, God once was, as God is, man may become. And this has been a foundational tenet of the Mormon Church. It speaks of the progression of God from being a mere mortal like you and I to the idea that mere mortals like you and I can become gods like him. And Dr. Mao said that he's been told by these BYU professors that that's no longer a real vital teaching in the Mormon Church. It's not even a functioning teaching in the Mormon Church, which is patently false. That's just not true. The Lorenzo Snow couplet has been hailed as doctrine in the Church. Several leaders have mentioned the Lorenzo Snow couplet from their own sermons. Even BYU professors such as Dr. Robert Millett and also Dr. Stephen Robinson have supported the teaching, even though these two men at the same time have tried to downplay its significance by saying it was never really official doctrine. And this is the phrase that becomes very confusing. A lot of times Mormon apologists, when they are pinned down with something that a Mormon leader has said, and mind you, it's the Mormon leadership, the Living Prophet, the First Presidency, the Council of the Twelve, these are the guys who have all the authority in the Mormon Church. But when a Mormon apologist is often confronted with statements made by some of these leaders, they will usually respond by saying something like, well, that was Brigham Young's opinion, or that was John Taylor's opinion. That's not necessarily official church doctrine, because for it to be official, we have to go through certain chains in order to make something an official doctrine. Personally, I find that kind of an argument being nothing less than really intellectually dishonest. Whether it's official doctrine or just doctrine, a teaching made by a general authority, is really insignificant. If a Mormon prophet or a living prophet or a Mormon apostle was teaching these things and it was believed by the people, they ought to just admit that yeah, they have taught this and it is believed by membership in the Church. And if they disagree with it personally, let them be honest and say so. But hiding behind the phrase official doctrine is really dishonest, because they are things that are taught and believed by Latter-day Saints even to this day. There's many of these things that are not considered official but are still believed by your modern Mormons. So this becomes very problematic, and one of the things, one of the obstacles that we have to face when trying to ferret out, well, what is Mormonism today? What do they actually believe? We have always, ever since we founded Mormonism Research Ministry back in 1979, we have always focused on the teachings of the general authorities, because historically that's where the rubber meets the road, the buck stops with them. Though we will take into consideration teachings from various Brigham Young University professors and even some lay apologists and people like that, we fully recognize these men, these individuals, really carry no authority in the Mormon Church whatsoever. A BYU professor carries no more authority when it comes to doctrine than the 19- and 20-year-old missionary knocking on your door. That's just the way the Mormon Church is set up.
Well, so clarify this for all of us. Who's you? And you raised this question and answered in your article as well. Who speaks for Mormonism, whether it's the Mormon apologist who says, well, we've softened that teaching, or the elder at the door who says, I've never heard that one before? Who really speaks for Mormonism?
The people who really speak for Mormonism has always been the First Presidency and the Council of the Twelve. When I wrote the Mormon Church here in Salt Lake City, after Dr. Mao put out his clarification, And he actually states that people like Robinson and Millett, for instance, were downplaying the Lorenzo Snow couplet, I wrote a contact that I have in the public relations department here in Salt Lake City, and asked for clarification on that. I said, was Dr. Millett actually espousing an official Mormon teaching as it is today, or what's going on here? They basically, I received an email back from one of their top PR people who basically told me that Dr. Millett does not speak for the church. That is the job of the First Presidency and Council of the Twelve. Well, that was no surprise to me. But here's what's interesting. When I wrote them back, you know, when I wrote him back thanking him for taking the time to write me, I said, well, could you please clarify that for me? You really didn't answer the question. Is the Lorenzo Snow couplet still a vital part of Mormon teaching? Well, that question went ignored, and I've not to this day received a response from the PR department regarding that question. And this is what really is frustrating for me, because Dr. Mao made the accusation on November 14th in the Tabernacle that we are going around telling Mormons what they believe without making a sincere effort, first of all, to ask them what they believe. But yet when I make a concerted effort as a professional researcher to ask, what is your position on this, I don't get an answer. I'm ignored. And I don't think that's the way you're supposed to do things. You know, at least, you know, give me some kind of acknowledgement here. But this is not uncommon. This happens a lot. When you ask the hard questions, you usually get an answer that's spun, or you get no answer at all.
So I'm not going to ask you to speculate, but answer the broader question. Laying aside the Lorenzo couplet, is Mormon teaching on such basic matters pertaining to their doctrines, is it changing?
I don't think it is. When I read, here's the difference between me and a person like Dr. Mao. I don't get my information from BYU professors. I get my information by reading the conference reports, by reading the books that are produced by the general authorities who have the authority to speak. I also get my information from manuals that are published under the auspices of the Corporation of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I spend hours reading these things, you know, almost daily. I do nothing but read this stuff. So I'm getting my information as it's coming down from the top. I think what's sad is it sounds to me like Dr. Mao is getting a lot of his information from some kind of a middle area here. And unfortunately, once you leave the top, there's where all your authority stays. It's all at the top. So that's really where we need to look. If, in fact, the Mormon Church is changing, why aren't we seeing this from the top down as it should be? I spent hours, you know, just recently listening to the conference messages and watching General Conference over the weekend. And this is the same old stuff we've been hearing for years. Nothing has changed at all. It all comes down to the basic, got to, you know, trust in the leadership of the Mormon Church. You've got to be a Mormon to get the best God has to offer. And to get the best God has to offer, it has to come through obedience to the commandments and listening to the leadership of the church. This is the same message we've been hearing over and over. We're not seeing any changes on the basic doctrines of the Mormon Church coming down from the top. I'm not witnessing that at all.
Tell us about what occupies the better part of your Christian Research Journal article, The Foundation for Ancient Research and Mormon Studies, or FARMS. Tell us about this organization and why does it exist?
Well, the Foundation for Ancient Research and Mormon Studies was put together by a number of scholars at Brigham Young University, primarily to help Mormons not only defend their faith, but to give the Mormon laity, the Mormon membership in general, some information that will help their faith, promote their faith, if you will, and to help them in their belief in Mormonism. And so they get into a lot of areas of scholarship, such as evidence that they believe supports the Book of Mormon or supports the Book of Abraham, supports basic Mormon doctrines. And this is really one of their primary functions, is to help the laity remain firm in the faith, because they fully realize that the Mormon Church has taken a lot of hits from the outside. There's been a lot of criticism regarding teachings of the Mormon Church, and specifically regarding the Book of Mormon's authenticity as a historical account of real people living in ancient times. And so they've put together a number of articles, magazines, journals. They put out a book called A Review of Books, where they critique books that have been written about the Book of Mormon or Mormonism in general. And for most of the laity in the Mormon Church, Farms is the perfect answer because it puts them at ease regarding these criticisms. What we tried to do in the article in the Christian Research Journal was to show that Farms is not without its own critics within the Mormon Church, or at least from people who were a part of the Mormon Church and just did not see them as a viable answer. So much of what you read in the article are not our personal criticisms against this organization, but actually criticism from other scholars who at least are Mormons or were Mormons, who we felt had somewhat of a voice, you know, some kind of a voice that qualified them to make these criticisms.
And how would you summarize the criticisms that are being leveled against Mormon apologetic organizations like Foundation for Ancient Research and Mormon Studies?
Well, the problem that we find is that, and we mentioned this in the article, is we don't see a whole lot of peer review from scholars outside of the Mormon faith. For instance, the Foundation for Ancient Research, Mormon Studies, will do a lot on the Book of Mormon, but yet we don't know of any qualified anthropologists, especially in the, you know, science of Mesoamerican history or archaeology or whatever, who actually comes to their defense and will support a lot of the things they're saying. In fact, the ones we do find seem to be very critical of the statements that are coming out of the Mormon Church and even from Farms material itself. So I think this needs to be taken into account, especially if you're a Latter-day Saint. I can understand the desire of wanting to have your faith confirmed in somewhat of a tangible way. But again, just because Farms or FAIR or any of these other, you know, groups out there, these apologetic groups that have sprung up over the years, just because they're giving an answer does not necessarily mean that it's a good answer. And this is where I think the Mormon individual has to take the time on his own to search these things out for himself to see if the answer he's getting from the church or from Farms or any of these other groups is really a plausible answer. And I think if they do that, they're going to see that there's a lot of flaws in some of these responses that they give.
We're talking with Bill McKeever about Mormon history and Mormon apologetics. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. If you have a question or a comment, our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, or our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We've got a few minutes here before our first break here, Bill. And let's just, before we get into how apologetics organizations are defending the claims, give us a rundown of the basic historical claims that are critical to Mormon teaching.
Well, one of the critical claims dealing specifically with the Book of Mormon, and the Book of Mormon is very, very important because everything hinges on the authenticity of the Book of Mormon. Mormon Apostle Jeffrey Holland said not long ago that if you can undermine the authenticity of the Book of Mormon, it undermines the credibility of Joseph Smith himself and also the church that he brought about. So Mormons are very well aware of how important the Book of Mormon is. The Book of Mormon itself makes some very serious claims. If you were to read, for instance, the title page in the Book of Mormon, it makes it very clear that there is a relationship between the people mentioned in the Book of Mormon and the House of Israel. If you read the story in the Book of Mormon, a lot of it at the very beginning circles around a man by the name of Lehi, who leaves Palestine around 600 years before Christ with his family, goes across the ocean to the New World and starts a whole new civilization with his family. Now, it says in there that Lehi is of the tribe of Manasseh, which gives him this Hebrew link. And Mormons have been told, all, you know, ever since they're young, that the Lamanites are actually, the ones that are mentioned in the Book of Mormon, the dark-skinned Lamanites, are actually the ancestors of the American Indian. If that's true, you would think that there would be some sort of genetic link between the American Indian and the Hebrews, and yet we're finding that that's just not the case at all. And this has caused a major problem for a lot of thinking Mormons, because whereas you would think there would be a link such as that, there is none to be found. And what's interesting is that when a lot of this was coming to the surface a few years ago, primarily through a young man by the name of Thomas Murphy, Mormon apologists were attacking him like crazy and saying that, you know, even though he was being mentioned as being like a Galileo, and what he was coming up was like a Galileo event, one professor by the name of Whiting actually said that, well, the difference between Murphy and Galileo is Galileo got his science right and Murphy didn't. Well, what's interesting now is so much evidence has come out about this that now all these BYU professors are starting to admit that Murphy did get it right. The only thing that they don't want to go so far as to say is to agree with Murphy's conclusions that if there is no genetic link, then Joseph Smith certainly blew it. What we have here is not a historical, a scriptural book. It's nothing more than a novel. And, of course, the BYU professors won't go that far. So this is a very important issue because it undermines the main theme of the Book of Mormon.
Let's take a quick phone call here before we go to this break. Bill McKeever is our guest. We're talking about Mormon history. Tim is on the line. Tim, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello, guys. How are you?
Very well.
I was hoping that Bill could explain a little bit about the Mormons' belief on restorationism and their whole basis for that.
Thank you very much, Tim. We've got about a minute and a half here before we go to our break. Do your best, Bill.
Okay. Well, restorationism is the idea that the Mormon Church believes that they are a restoration of true Christianity the way it was taught back around the time of Jesus and the apostles. There was a movement going on during the time of the founding of the Mormon Church, primarily through what was known as the Campbellite movement, and they also believed that they wanted to get back to the primitive roots of Christianity. So the Campbellites, which later became the Disciples of Christ, the Church of Christ, and then the Mormons also believed that their ideas go clear back to the original church. Of course, it'd be very difficult to find anywhere in history that the early church believed like Mormons. But yet that is one of the primary jobs of the apologists, is to try to show there's some kind of connection there.
Now, quickly, how do they explain the lack of any evidence that Mormon teachings existed in the early church?
An apostasy. They'll say that there was this complete apostasy of the Christian religion, and that's why we don't see any of this anymore. It was all expunged. And so you're going to catch little things here and there in different cultures that tend to be a parallel to what Mormons believe, but you really don't find one group holding to all these teachings that the Mormons hold to today. But this is kind of how they get away with it, is by claiming that there was a complete apostasy of the Christian religion that culminated around the Council of Nicaea in 325.
So this, in many ways, is kind of a conspiracy theory. There's no evidence for the fact that Mormonism existed prior to this apostasy, and the lack of evidence serves as the primary evidence that it did.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. When we come back from this break, we're going to continue our conversation with Bill McKeever. We're looking at the history claims of Mormonism, also dealing with the issue of Mormon apologists who are, well, being criticized even within the pale of Mormonism. If you have a question or a comment, and we'll take your phone calls on the other side of this break as well, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Bill McKeever is founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Utah, co-author of the book Mormonism 101, and he's written an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled LDS Apologetics and the Battle for Mormon History. 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.